space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. It's a big day. We're going to be talking about the city on the edge of forever. Clay is here to talk about it with us. Clay, how are you?
I am both and neither.
We have, you know what I actually think about when I hear this title? I think of Saved by the Bell, the new class.
Where the what?
The song is "We're living on the edge of tomorrow today," and I always go, "The city on the edge of forever today."
But I thought you were going to talk about that. That heart-wrenching episode where Kelly gets hit by a truck at the end.
College is tumultuous.
Few people realize that's actually how that series ends.
Anyway, we're here to talk about City on the Edge of Forever, which is kind of a well-known episode of Star Trek, written by Harlan Ellison, or credited at least to Harlan Ellison, directed by Joseph Pevney. Me and Clay are going to talk about this one where, after taking an accidental overdose of cordrazine, Dr. Leonard McCoy goes back in time and changes history. All right, Clay, I'm going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back and talk about the city on the edge of forever.
Within, like, a month of where we're supposed to be.
Captain, I did not plan to eavesdrop.
No, of course you didn't.
I must point out that when she stumbled, she might have died right there had you not caught her.
It's not yet time. McCoy isn't here.
We're not that sure of our facts. Who's to say when the exact time will come? Save her. Do as your heart tells you to do. And millions will die who did not die before.
I think if I remember correctly, you thought you had a contentious take on this episode. Is that right?
Yes. Before we get into that, I pose a question to you, because I think this episode, I don't think either of us are going to say that this is a shitty episode, especially not coming off the one that we just watched.
Yeah, I'm ready to bring my A game after I feel I was not able to bring my A game in the alternative factor, because I was basically the kid who showed up for the test without studying, except I had studied all night, and I don't understand why I did so poorly.
Our commentary was basically a 20 minute elongated fart noise. but hey, you get what you put into it and you get what you take out of it. So the question I want to ask you is, do you feel like this episode is overrated, or do you think that its deification is warranted?
I will say that I think our conversation is largely going to go around this sort of argument, right? Because I don't think anyone is going to say that this is a bad episode, as you were saying.
Right.
I do think this is the best episode of season one of TOS. Mm-hmm. So I don't know going forward if that's going to change. This might remain the best episode of TOS of all time. Mm-hmm. I think there's a few TNG episodes that are better than this one. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. I think it's overrated just in the way that anything that's seen as like the epitome of something is kind of overrated in a way. Like, you could always take pot shots at it. And I don't think this episode is perfect, but this is the only one that actually generated an emotional response in me so far.
Okay.
And so I think it's important for that reason. And there's a few other things, but why don't you explain what you were thinking by asking me that question?
Well, I think this is a really great episode. I think the story's really good. But I think it's constantly listed as the best TOS episode, and very often listed as one of, if not the best Star Trek episode ever made.
Right.
And I've said this a few times before, but for me, I feel like in order to win that title, you have to be fully representative of all the things that make the show great. That's just my opinion. Anybody can dispute that if they want. But and for me, I think this could have been just really any sci-fi story.
Yeah.
There's not a ton that I think is specific to Star Trek, aside from like little details, like how they get to the planet, and that's about it.
Right. Yes, and I don't think I can disagree with that. And I also think that the script is maybe not the strongest. Like, I think Balance of Terror's script is is pound for pound a better.
See, yeah, I was going to say, for me, I would rank Balance of Terror higher than this, from personally.
Yes.
I think Balance of Terror, and I said this in the episode, I think it's a better all-encompassing Star Trek episode. I mean, obviously, you could argue that, well, he just took a submarine thing and turned into a, you know, whatever. But I think what they do with it, I think everything, all the action is involving stuff that is very specific to Star Trek.
Yeah.
From the characters to the ships to all the different things that they have to do, X, Y, and Z. Whereas this one, you know, they get to the planet by beaming down, and then they just sort of have a time travel story.
Yes. Yeah.
Where Spock being mistaken as a Chinese person.
Who got his ears caught in a rice-picking machine.
Yeah, that ad-lib from Captain Kirk was pretty amazing.
I don't disagree with what you're saying about, like, it could just be sort of any sci-fi show that kind of does this. I do think that it has a few things going for it in my mind that, like, kind of stick out to me. It's one of the few episodes where I think, like, the time travel aspect, where you actually feel like they could be trapped in this time period, feels like a real thing that could happen to them. Mm-hmm. How they mentioned that, you know, before Spock and Kirk go back in time, they tell Uhura and everything that, well, you guys might as well go back in time to find somewhere to live as opposed to staying here if things go badly. I also think that the time travel, the mechanic of the time travel is interesting to me, where they basically have like a flip book of historical events, and you just have to jump in at the right time to get back to wherever time you were. It doesn't seem like the device itself is well designed, and I don't understand what they were trying to do when the people who built this thing were doing.
Yeah, it's it's interesting to me that I guess it makes sense because they do the space god thing a lot on the show, but they don't. The time travel mechanics are I hesitate to even use the word mechanical,
right?
Because it's very like otherworldly, mystical. There's not. I mean, even the way that they get there and they get back, even the way the thing explains itself, which honestly is probably for the best, because the more specific, anytime you get specific in time travel stuff, it just gums up your story.
Yeah.
So to have your time travel mechanism be a sentient time portal that anytime it asks a question is like, well, yes and no. So kinda.
I am a being and a machine, or neither, just so you know.
You know, I think that helps because it's not – the story isn't about the mechanics. It's not about the time travel mechanics. So it's not like – you know, usually – what's a good example? Back to the Future 3 is a good example to compare this to, where the mechanics of time travel in Back to the Future 3 are basically the driving force of the plot. Because they have to figure out how to rebuild the DeLorean to get the DeLorean up to 88 miles per hour in order to get back to the future. And in the process of doing that, Doc Brown falls in love with, you know, Clara Clayton, saves her from dying, which she should have done.
Yep.
And already changes the future. And then, you know, they find out Doc's going to die and all this, blah, 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 blah. So they have to change the future in the process of getting back to the future. Whereas this one, the mechanics don't matter. The story is about being in that time and how the changing events butterfly effect themselves out to change all of history.
Right.
So how you get there doesn't matter. They honestly, you could. I would find it equally as believable as if they had gotten into the transporter. They did one of those like galaxy time blip things that they did from the last episode.
Right.
And
they get shot somewhere else.
Yeah, if they just end up in the past, why not?
Yeah.
And then Scotty's like, oh, the magnetic something from the stars next to us blipped them into the past. I don't know. It's just as believable. It doesn't matter.
It's a good point because I think we both had mentioned before recently, sort of rewatching it. I've modulated a bit on this, but they don't go back in time for a very long time here.
Yeah.
It takes basically the whole first act for them to, in a very convoluted way, get down to the planet and have McCoy go crazy, and that leads him into the thing.
I was just going to say, the first break of this show is not very good. The way that they get A, down to the planet, and then back in time. I couldn't believe that they weren't in the past by the end of the first break.
Yeah,
so they come
teaser,
back from the first commercial. After the cold open, the credits, but the first proper act, they come back from the first commercial break and they're still on the planet. They haven't done anything yet.
I feel it's the kind of episode that opens with the teaser of them being in the past and you not knowing how they're there. And mm-hmm. then they explain that they're looking for McCoy and that kind of a thing.
I can see them doing that. I think very easily you could do that. But the reason...
Do you need to see this gate? Is this...
You don't need to see the gate, but you do need to see time change.
Okay. The
important thing that happens is when he just, takes a flyer through that space Stargate, and then they try to radio back to the Enterprise, but there's nothing there.
Right.
And the gate is everything you knew is gone. The reason you're still here, that explanation is kind of obtuse, because I think they say something about... Kirk makes some thing about... He says, clearly Earth still exists because we're still here, but that doesn't make any sense.
I got a little bit of a sort of spoiler. We wanted to talk about the comic book, which is an interpretation of the original story by Harlan Ellison, and it got turned into a comic instead of what this episode was, because the plot here is not heavily, but it's revised from what his original idea was.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think they mentioned... that there's a time bubble around the gate in the comic.
I think they do that in the show as well.
Okay.
I believe they do anyway. But I think – I can't remember if that comes before or after. But Kirk definitely has a line about Earth still being there because they're – I don't know.
Okay.
But I think the main explanation, the one that makes sense, is that obviously their temporal whatever is all messed up. So, time doesn't – the changes – externally don't affect them while they're on the surface of the planet.
Right, I agree with you. I think they needed to see you need to see the stakes about why they have to go back for McCoy, and it is mm-hmm. nice to see that this is the how they're able to go back in time. They go through this sort of mystical gate. It takes a long time to get there, and I feel that of all the episodes that I've seen from the first season of TOS, this is the one that could have most easily been turned into a movie. And
I was thinking that. Well, I mean, technically they do turn into a movie eventually. But I was wondering that because I was thinking about that. I keep wondering when they're going to start mining old episodes for movies. They already remade Wrath of Khan, basically.
Right.
but I was thinking about this. Especially when I was looking at the comic, because the main difference, not to get, again, too spoilery, is that the comic has a much wider scope to it. And there's a lot of stuff in the comic that clearly whoever was in charge of the budget for the show was just like, nope.
Right.
So I could see them taking the new movie crew and redoing the story, but on a bigger budget or something.
Yeah.
But would it be a cop-out to spend however much money on your big budget? I mean, Star Trek is now in the Star Wars level of, big budget summer blockbuster stuff.
Yeah.
So it might be a bit of a cop-out for – I don't know if that movie would make a ton of money. Let's put it that way. It might be a great movie. I don't know.
But. Yeah. I think that's more the – that would be more the trade-off. It just feels like – not that they should turn it into a movie, but it feels like it's very easy to massage this into a feature-length movie.
I think so.
It might actually do a service to the plot of Kirk falling in love, because it's hindered by the episode thing is he has to fall in love in a certain amount of time. I actually think it does a good job of doing that, all things mm-hmm. considered. But if you had more time to think about that and more opportunities to sort of explore what that would mean, I think that would help the episode. And honestly, when I was watching it, I was watching the first 80% of this episode going, this would be a good movie. And then it mm-hmm. ended, and I was like, I'm kind of glad it was just an episode. Like,
yeah.
Like, is that kind of a trade-off?
Yeah, I think it's – the problem is if you go longer with the story, then you have to like I mentioned before, that your scope has to get wider. So you're going to need, like, another subplot probably to that they're going to have to be going after, more ominous than just McCoy fucking lost his mind. We got to find him before he does something stupid.
It's also interesting that they show up before McCoy, right? So they're kind of just killing time waiting for McCoy, so you don't even get crazy McCoy for a very long amount of time.
Yeah. I think what they end up – what this episode does really well, especially – again, I don't know if I should talk about this until we talk about the comic, but just as a teaser for that it's very tight. Like, they've really cut away a lot of the peripheral stuff that, honestly, you don't really need to get across the heart of the story that they want to tell.
Right.
And I think going much longer – I think – because, you know, honestly, this is one that, if I remember correctly, when I went back and I watched it a couple years ago, I thought it was a two-parter.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it should be, like you were saying.
Yes. Yeah, it seems like
it should be longer, but I'm glad that it's not, because I think it is very tight, and I think they get in and they get out and they tell the story that they want to, and they do it pretty well.
Yep. And I mean, any longer you'd be sort of running into the other characters needing to do things, which they cleverly do not deal at all here, because that's been a running problem of TOS. You haven't been watching all the episodes, but I do think that one of the big problems of TOS is they rely very heavily on plots that isolate characters from the ship. Mm-hmm. It's either Kirk getting stuck in some like mystical illusion, or the Enterprise gets shut off or something. And we've talked about it on TNG, how it's always a problem when the cast on the ship can't do anything because they can't save the day, but you still have to check in with them. I think the worst offender is Arena, the battle with the Gorn, where Kirk is on the planet fighting the Gorn, and after, you know, a couple unsuccessful checkbacks with the Enterprise crew, they basically just say, well, fuck it, we'll just watch the episode on the view screen of the Enterprise, and the crew sits and watches Kirk fight the Gorn, and that's how it breaks down. But City on the Edge avoids that. We never check in with Uhura and Scotty.
Right.
And I'd also assume that the change to their perspective would be instantaneous. As soon as Kirk goes back in time, everything would change itself, right?
Yeah, theoretically, yeah. I mean, I can't remember if they mentioned that or not. For some reason, I thought I missed a line of dialogue, but I didn't go back to check. When they jump back through the portal, Scotty says something like, oh, you guys are just gone a couple seconds.
Right,
I don't know. Yeah. I could be just making that up, because it makes sense that that's what it would be.
Right, which is a funny perspective. Like, this huge important event basically takes no time at all for other people to go through
it. I was actually thinking, I would love to see a story just like this that is from the Scotty and Co. perspective. So it's like they jump into the time thing, and so you've got maybe, like, let's say it takes 2 minutes for everything to go down, right? Like, they go in, 2 minutes later they come back out. So they go in, and, like, how quickly do they start thinking about, all right, we got to eat him.
Right.
And if we want to stay alive, one of us is going to have to sleep with Uhura.
Right.
How quickly do they start to dissolve, like, in the 90 seconds it takes for Kirk and Kirk and Spock to come back through the thing?
Yeah, they come back, and it's like Lord of the Flies. Like, Scotty's just wearing, like, a loincloth and, like, has a spear, and it's just like, well, this is the city on the edge.
I think that's probably, like, a good, like, five-panel comic.
Do you think that...
You could do that in one page, I think.
Does the comic do a better job of explaining why this is called The City on the Edge of Forever?
Yes, because there's actually a city.
A city, yes.
Yeah. instead of just a big Stargate and one broken column.
It's a good title. It just doesn't fit what's actually going on.
Oh, it's a great title. Yeah, it's an awesome... It's a really cool-sounding title.
So let's talk about, I guess, the meat of this episode, which is... the episode actually kind of reminds me of Time's Arrow, too. Remember when Data went back in time and had to build the machine, just like Spock does?
I was thinking about the same thing. Oh, before we get into that, I do want to bring up one thing that happens in the little the preamble there.
Hmm.
When they come down to the planet and they get all of the exposition from the talking hole, and they find out it's a time machine, Kirk goes, wait a minute. So you're telling me we could use this fairly unstable piece of technology we know nothing about to jump back and go backwards in time 2 days to prevent McCoy from overdosing on this thing that apparently find out later clears up with like bed rest and a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
Like, come on, come the fuck on, Kirk. Kirk is smarter than that.
We could go
Kirk
back.
Is smarter than to just go down to an alien planet and just jump into a time hole just to save McCoy 2 days of detox.
Yes, I thought that was very funny. Although the time travels aspect is funny. There's some episode, I think we podcasted, where after the whole climax of the episode happens, the last 2 minutes are the ship escapes from whatever near catastrophe it is, and they find out that they've gone back in time a few days, and it has no bearing on anything.
Oh, yeah.
There's no reason for that to have happened. It might have been where no man has gone before, but I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they played loosey-goosey with a lot of the time travel stuff. Like, yeah, Kirk wanting to basically clear up McCoy's cold by sending it back to him before he gets infected with the cold, which makes not a lot of sense.
Yeah. Anyway,
so
moving on.
They go back in time. We meet a bunch of characters. I think it's maybe the most effective episode that all the series have done at going back in time, where I don't feel like I'm in some sort of parody of what the past would be.
Yeah.
Them. Which makes the sort of romance subplot a lot better and more relatable and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, they run into the cop. Kirk has this sort of racist commentary about the Chinese. which is nicely timed for that. And then I also think it's weird that we go back to New York City, right? Instead of San Francisco, which seems to be the standby for Star Trek to go back in time to.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think about that, but
yeah, they're in New York. And then we meet Edith Keeler, who is the kindest hearted soul that you've ever met. And Kirk falls in love with her slowly, and Spock works on his machine. They learn what they have to do to get out of this, and Edith Keeler must die.
Interestingly, again, not to jump too far into the comic, in the comic she is Sister Edith Keeler.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay, yeah. In this one she runs the mission, but they don't out and out say that she's a nun. But in the comic they seem to imply that she's a nun.
Huh. And
which
Kirk swoons her?
Yeah, which does not stop her from falling in love with Kirk at all.
Right, okay.
So it doesn't really matter. See? It's all about good cutting.
We'll pause in the action, but we're back. Edith Keeler, so she was a nun in the comics. Kirk still manages to get in. I haven't finished the comic. That's why we can't talk about it in this episode. But look forward to that in another episode. So she's a nun, and Kirk, I guess, yeah, she would be sort of. She doesn't seem particularly religious in this episode, although she does run the mission.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't know why it's in there. It's a needless detail, which they were good to cut out.
To cut out, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the more interesting things about this episode to me is how it mixes a lot of morality in a way that I didn't think Star Trek would want to do, right? Like, this episode seems to me to be a huge contradiction of what Roddenberry eventually would come to, where the episode is directly saying that pacifism in this case is wrong, which is not particularly Star Trek-y. Just saying that because of the kind heart of this woman, Nazi Germany is allowed to win World War II.
Yeah, it's an interesting... The way they play it out is really interesting because Kirk... They basically... They address that a little bit when Kirk says, she was ahead of her time. There's something... There's a good line that Spock says where she had the right idea at the wrong time.
Yes.
And it's really interesting because it's... I like that they don't make a comment on that. Like, there's no... I don't think that they particularly take a stance on it.
No, they don't.
Which is good.
Yeah. They allow... I think it's more interesting in the abstract. Like, what Kirk has to do is, you know, allow her to die. And it's also kind of like it's not like she's a bad person that needs to die. It's not like they're going back in time to kill Hitler.
Right.
They have to allow a good person to die in order to sort of be good for the rest of society. It's also interesting to me that this was written only, you know, 20 years after World War II ended.
Right.
Which is basically like our 9/11 that we would have been like, you know, time-wise, anyway, it's been a little bit less than that. But it's World War II is very recent to this episode. So it's interesting that they, the timing of it and all that kind of stuff, and thinking about redoing it.
If you notice, they set it in a time period that is about the same time distance from World War I.
Yes.
Which is interesting, too, because they go into that a little bit more in the comic, kind of abstractly.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, just a little bit. But, you know, they make mention, Edith asks Kirk if he was in the war, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, so, they kind of do that here, where Spock calls him Captain and she overhears it.
Yeah, in the comic they do a little bit more than that.
But, okay.
Yeah, in the episode, that's pretty much the only passing mention they make to it. But it is kind of an interesting position relative to when the show was made.
Right, yeah. What'd you think of Edith Keel? What'd you think of this whole romance? Because Spock is basically Spock serves as the conscience in this mm-hmm. episode, where he has to remind mm-hmm. Kirk what's going on. And other than that, he's basically spending his time building the computer to get themselves back out of it. I thought it was really well done, the way that they reveal that Spock sees the two newspaper headlines from, like, he see that's how he determines when McCoy had an effect, because he can see that that's when the change happens.
Right.
I thought that was really cleverly done. I like that the computer breaks before they can sort of finalize what is going to happen to her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so what do you think of it's basically the Kirk and Edith Keeler show at this point for a good, you know, 30 minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
Did you think it works?
Yeah, I do. I think they're in danger of pushing it too far, but I think it's like right in the pocket of believability.
Yeah.
Because they're there long enough. I mean, Kirk obviously, you know, falls in love with her as soon as he sees her.
Yes.
But they don't, as far as I remember, they don't have a scene where it's just like, I love you, I love you. They imply that it's getting to that point. Kirk obviously has feelings for her, but there's not a...
He tells Spock that he thinks he loves her, but he never tells her that he loves her.
Yeah, but it's like believable, though. It's not like, I just met you 2 days ago, but I would trade the entire human history.
Right.
You know, like, he's right. he's not on the... I think in a different story, there would be a part where Kirk was like, no, we have to find another way. But at this point, he's like, okay,
this sucks. Yeah.
I really like this woman, but obviously the fate of human history is more important.
Right.
But to be fair, in the comic he does mention this, but I can't remember that they follow it up with a satisfying answer. But I was thinking, well, he doesn't even say, why can't we just bring her back with us?
Oh yeah.
But I think that plays into the abstractness of the time travel mechanism, because clearly it's not something they have control over.
Right. The guardian of the gate or whatever would have the ability.
It's basically implied that as soon as the timeline writes itself, they're going to get yanked back into the future.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously, it's not like you can just look up and talk to the guardian and be like, hey, can't we just remove her from the timeline?
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. We never really get the sense of what the gate actually would have its own, like, ethics about that kind of thing, but it makes sense that it actually would. I think the Edith Keeler stuff works well. It's probably the best romance that they've done so far between them. It doesn't just come about as, like, Kirk sort of overpowering the character with his, like, his innate sexuality is what they're trying to hint at or something. It comes around mm-hmm. very organically. You know, even starting with she lets Kirk and Spock stay there, and then she gives her speech at the soup kitchen type thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the bums is basically just like, oh, not this lady again. And Kirk tells him to shut up because he's interested in what she has to say. I did like that she opened her statement by calling them bums.
Yeah.
Which is a nice touching aspect of the 60s there. She's like, I don't care that you're bums. You can be bums with a vision of the future and stuff like that.
I would like to see a parody episode, a parody of this where, like, she just keeps falling in love with the newest drifter to come through the door.
Yes, yeah.
Because as soon as McCoy shows up, she's like, oh, oh, sweetie, come, like, it's...
And he's blotchy as fuck. Like, he yeah. He's clearly got some kind
he's
of disease.
He's clearly got, like, syphilis or something. But, yeah, it would be great if it was, like, then a third guy shows up and she's all over that guy and Florence Nightingaling that guy.
I think that the I think the script is really mature here. It comes down to small things like the McCoy and Spock almost seeing each other scene where Spock is working in the kitchen. That to me is that's good writing, and it's not something that you see in these episodes a lot. It's just kind of like the just missed him, like things are so close. And I think a great aspect of this is McCoy meeting her before he interferes in the timeline. You know, it kind of it switches because what you're led to believe is that McCoy going crazy has somehow caused this to happen.
Right.
Where that's not the case at all. He actually sobers up and he tries to save her because he's grown to like her as well. And it's a reversal of, you know, when it opens up, you think that he's gone crazy and he probably went back in time and shot somebody or something like that. And that's not the way that it works out at all.
So here's a question for you that's going to break your brain. If the reason she dies is because she gets hit by a car because she's crossing the street to walk back to McCoy and Kirk, how does she die if Kirk and Spock aren't there? Or I should say, how does that event happen where McCoy saves her if she's never in that position to begin with? Because Kirk is not taking her to the movies.
What would happen? Well, McCoy. Well,
the answer is it doesn't matter.
Well, I'm trying to hash out. I mean, it's a good question. I'm just trying to hash out if them going back in time has always happened throughout every version of the timeline. I think right is that's like a Terminator type argument. I would think.
I mean, technically no, because there has to be a version of the timeline where McCoy saves her from being killed.
Well, if they don't go back, she probably doesn't get hit by the car, right? So that means that them going back in time is ultimately what causes her to die, which is necessary to avoid World War II's defeat.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that in a way they are always indirectly responsible for her death.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that makes sense. Sure, I'll buy that.
Yeah, that would be my argument about it. But if you're saying that McCoy only going back,
McCoy only going back
would have a different outcome than that.
Yeah, it would be, and maybe they answer that question by not telling you exactly how she dies.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Spock just says car accident, I think.
Yeah, they say a car accident, but they're not more specific than that.
Yep.
So I guess you can kind of get around that by
this car accident.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily that event, but it was something. It was the second car that hit her.
it was a car on the hilly knoll or whatever, the grassy knoll that hit her.
Well, when she gets hit, if you notice, her head goes back into the left.
I think it works out really well. I like the ending there. I like Spock's line of he knows all too well or whatever he says. McCoy's like, Jim, do you know what you've done? And Spock's thing is like he knows all too well what he's done. Go ahead.
I was just going to say another thing about the time travel mechanics. It takes away the necessity to have them be like, all right, now we have to get back to the portal or this thing will only be open for 30 seconds.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
That kind of bullshit.
Yep.
So all they can do is just fade out and they come back and they're back.
Yes, they're back. Leading to what I think is so far my favorite ending of maybe it's like a top five ending of all the Star Trek episodes that I've seen so far. Mm-hmm. I think the ending is like sort of beautiful in a way, even the way that the camera lingers on the portal or whatever it is after they beamed up. But it's just Kirk's like, let's get the hell out of here. And off they go. He doesn't want to answer the questions, doesn't want to think about it, he just wants to get out of there and leave. I think it's really excellent, a really good way to wrap up the episode without the usual. They did it in the alternative factor. They've fallen into the cliche. Every episode now ends with Kirk and Spock and McCoy sometimes talking to each other on the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of just like hashing out what the whole message of the episode is about.
Yes. Yeah.
And I don't need that all the time. This is much better than that.
Yeah, I think so. Part of me was thinking Kirk should be like, let's get the hell out of here. And do we have enough stuff to blow this planet up?
Yeah, yeah. Or he shoots a phaser at the gate, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, I kind of liked that they you know, don't address that at all, because I think in other stories you would have something like you know, they get down to the planet and something about the planet is unstable,
yeah,
you know, and shit's falling apart. So when they come back, just in time before the mountain collapses and destroys the gate or some shit,
right.
You know, like that kind of thing. But the fact that it's just there, just in space somewhere, is this, you know, sentient time portal,
yeah,
in this Lovecraftian city is pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that. I think everything about that ending works for me. I think the episode in general works for me.
I wish the portal had been like, so, do you guys like stuff?
What's happening outside this planet? I haven't been out for a very long time.
It's just me here. I mean, honestly, if you want to go somewhere specific, I'll send you there. Just don't leave.
It's fortunate that the thing that history has apparently only happened on Earth, that you don't have to like view the history of all the alien planets or anything. Do they get around that? Do they explain?
I think that he makes some line about your Earth. He says like your Earth history or something, doesn't he?
Okay, so he's just sort of reading their minds. And
in the comic, Kirk specifically requests to see Earth's history.
Okay.
Yeah, like it's weird. In the show and in the book, there's like this passing fascination where Kirk is like, a time portal. Well, I mean, I could do lots of cool stuff with,
right,
that, but they never really get into it at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if it's supposed to be some, you know, precursor to him learning that you can't fuck with time or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, because they haven't fucked it up to this point yet. Like the dangers of time travel have not become apparent to the Star Trek people at this point. So you still have the giddiness of it.
And they don't even really have a conversation about it.
No.
I mean, once they get there, they do.
Yeah.
But,
well, it's a good thing that the bum who phasers himself doesn't have any sort of lasting impact on the timeline.
Why was McCoy carrying, like, a phaser grenade?
I didn't...
Also, funny you should say that, they do cover that in the book. That thing that you just said, they cover...
Oh, really?
That very specific thing that you said, they do cover in the book.
Well,
but yeah,
good.
I don't know why McCoy is carrying a... Without going into it, the way that that is handled in the book, I don't know why they didn't just cut it out of the script for the show, because...
I don't know why that scene is in this episode. It's distracting to me, and it actually was the only boring part, because you don't need to see McCoy here. He's not a necessary part. His motivations are not necessary in the story.
Right. And also, it brings up a question that they don't answer. Well, they answer it in the comic, but they don't answer it in the show, which is... Why doesn't all of history change because McCoy killed that guy?
Sure,
you know,
because
that wouldn't have happened, and you know, but it brings up an unnecessary question. I don't know why they just didn't have him walk away or so. I don't know.
They could have just ended it with the broken milk, where the guy drops the milk and he runs off, and McCoy starts chasing him, saying like, "Wait for me, I'll protect you."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's all you need to say. You don't need the rest of it, because you just need to see McCoy come back in to that timeline and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So. Did you have any other like big issues with it, or do you think it doesn't live up to the Star Trek, what you would consider to be the best episode, or something that has to encompass like what that thing is about in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my opinion is probably splitting hairs, really, because when you're getting into a discussion of what two episodes are the greatest of all time,
right.
It's, you know, it's really a coin flip.
Yep.
It's all very subjective. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really great. I think it's really well done. It's acted really well. Everybody in it's really good. Even the small roles are good. That bum is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
you know, it's a pretty dark ending, but it's simultaneously dark and hopeful, and it's sort of I feel like they end up mining this one pretty well, at least thematically, once they get to the movies, because it's basically kind of the same plot, or at least the fun aspects of the plot of Star Trek IV.
Right.
And it has the, without straight up saying it, it has the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, or the one sentiment. so it has a lot of, it's a very far reaching episode. Yeah, I mean, it's a great episode. I think I would definitely recommend it for some. Well, yeah, I would.
Yeah,
I was gonna say if someone had never watched Star Trek before and I had to name like three episodes, would I name that? I probably would be.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'd agree. It's a very good episode that I think maybe might be hard to recommend in some ways, mm-hmm. just because it does exist outside of the norms of the show. And if you watch this thinking, oh, this is what Star Trek is, you're kind of in for a surprise.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think I would say start with this.
No.
But it would definitely be in the first five, yeah. I would say, to watch.
I mean, this episode is definitely in my top five. I think it's maybe my favorite of the first, top five of the first season, I think. Mm-hmm. Things will change as we go forward.
Do you think that – so I was thinking about this because I was asking my girlfriend about it because she watched it with me and we were talking about it a little bit.
Did she like it?
Yeah, she was kind of doing other stuff, but yeah. She did like it.
Yeah.
And she was saying because she was sort of playing devil's advocate to my argument. And she was saying that – she brought up the idea that do you think – the reason that it's so highly regarded is because it's so different. Because a lot of if you go back and you look at a lot of these shows, it's usually a lot of times it's the episodes that are different than the norm are the ones that people always cite.
Right.
So like with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, for instance, everyone's always like, oh, the musical episode, the one where they sing the entire time. It's not a standard Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode, but it's the one that everybody points to.
Right.
Do you think that has something to do with it, that it is so different than than what Star Trek casually is?
I think that might have something into it, but after watching all these episodes, this is one of the best made episodes.
Like, oh, absolutely,
It's clearly, you know, maybe it ties into what we're saying. It might be overrated by this point, mm-hmm. but it's, in my estimation, TOS is not as great a series as TNG is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that the best of TOS is slightly worse than the best of TNG, but in the same time, this is the best that TOS can do. TOS has a lot of sort of flaws that carry over that this episode doesn't have.
Yeah.
In my opinion, the best TOS episodes at this point have a consistent story that doesn't, like, they don't change focus halfway through and like get tired of what they're talking about and do something else with it.
Yep.
And they also have like a center to them that is actually about something, and they actually explore what they're talking about, as opposed to, hey, time travel's bad, this is a reason why, now I'm going to go fist fight somebody. Or the Khan episode, like, let's talk about eugenics. Oh, but it'll just break down into a fist fight between people.
Yeah, there's no, unless you count the McCoy stuff at the beginning, there's no gratuitous ass beating in this episode, is
there? No. It's just that.
I think it's partly because, you know, I think you said it earlier. This is the first one I've never watched the entire TOS series. I've watched a handful of them, and I've obviously watched a bunch of them. This is the first one where I felt like the emotional aspect really worked.
Yes, I'd agree. I 100% really agree with that. Yeah,
it's, you know, Balance of Terror, I think, is great for a different reason.
Yep.
I think it's very the tension is great, the action is great, and it's all like it's just a really well made, you know, edge of your seat kind of thing. Whereas this one really gets you, as the kids like to say, gets you in the feels.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I hate that, but I'll say it because it illustrates my point.
Well, I think it's a good episode in that regard, because it actually pins onto like a realistic sort of understandable emotion that I don't think the Kirk mm-hmm. character is normally written that way. His emotional response is more about bigger, headier, not always as bad as the alternative factor, but like sort of world-changing events. Mm-hmm. This is a world-changing event, but he's moored to the love interest aspect of it. So it ties you in that way.
Yeah, and I think it works so well because it's, as far as I know anyway, I'm not sure if you've watched any that have approached him from the same way, but it's the first one where Kirk's relationship. It's forcing Kirk into a different kind of relationship.
Right.
He's not. It's not just the. What shit? I can never remember the names of these episodes. The last one we did with the Hamlet thing.
Oh, Conscience of the King.
Yeah, Conscience. It's not like that where he's like, "Hey, I was here to see your father, but you're pretty cute."
Yes. You know, he tends to have a. You know, if I was writing like a feminist critique of it, he tends to have sort of a power dominance in the relationships. Like he comes into the relationship and he sort of imposes his will on the woman who happens to be in that story. Not right. that he rapes her, but his pursuit of the character comes from him being in a dominant position, where here it feels much more natural that they fall in love, kind of
yes.
an aspect.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. Yeah, I would 100% agree with that.
So I think that that's more of a mature storytelling that they've actually managed to do here in The City on the Edge of Forever.
Completely unrelated, well, sort of. These last two episodes, I've really noticed how short the skirts are on the women of the Enterprise.
Amy can't watch this without saying, "I can see Uhura's coochie from here." Because
yeah, like I had never. I don't think I'd ever seen Uhura from the back.
Yep.
But her ass is just hanging out.
It's hanging.
Caitlin had a good point where she said. I guess I never noticed it because she's always sitting down. And I was like, that's a really good point. I never really thought about that because all of the other women, especially in Alternative Factor, I was like, God, these skirts are so short.
Getting older, I think, noticing. No, it's very strange. Uhura is the one that always sticks out to me. It's just like her ass is literally hanging out of her uniform when she's
wearing. What's actually funny and is not obviously quite as revealing as the women's costumes is I've started to notice that the men crew members, their colored shirts are very short. They're like very, very top of what you would consider your waist is where the line goes.
Right.
And then they're wearing like the black pants and they've got a black shirt under it. Cause there's like a few scenes where I think in Alternative Factor, maybe in this one, where they're like moving and they're being active, so their arms are up.
Yeah,
and it's like they're wearing half shirts, and I did not realize how short those shirts were.
They weren't yet into the replicator era, so there's a limited amount of cotton to go around for these outfits.
And only some of those guys have those sweet transporter room geese. Or
yes,
I don't know why. There's just like a handful of people who are just in loungewear.
I think it's just the transporter people.
Just the
transporter people wear those gi outfits for no particular reason.
You need something that breathes a little bit more.
While you're sliding the slider up and down on the thing.
Oh, that's the other thing I hate. They did it in both of these episodes. I really don't like the idea that you can energize yourself down to a planet.
Yeah, it
like
seems
that
odd.
You can flip the button and then jump onto the thing. Yep. I don't like that.
It's on some kind of timer or something like that. Yeah, they don't really explain that. They also don't explain how a karate chop can do so much damage to people, but I guess we're just living in the future.
That was a double karate chop.
Oh, was it?
You get him in the side and then you get him on the neck with the same hand.
As we're wrapping up first season awards, still the best Kirk fight scene is still the one in Tomorrow Is Yesterday where he fights the Air Force officers in like 1960s Earth. It is sublime. People just need to go watch that fight scene because it is outstanding.
I didn't watch that episode. So do they actually go back to the 60s or do the pilots end up in the future? I can't remember.
No,
I've seen it before.
They go back to the 60s.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
Oh, so they have time traveled before.
They have, but they have very little impact on Earth in that episode.
I see.
I
very vaguely remember
Earth,
that episode.
Earth sees the Enterprise in orbit and they think it's a UFO.
Oh, right.
And then the Enterprise sort of takes off, but they have to capture one of the pilots, and then it's a, well, what do we do with this guy kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So they don't really have there's no way that they can impact anything outside of that. But yeah, guys, that's it. City on the Edge of Forever. That's, you know, it's a classic episode. It is what it is. Me and Clay are going to play an audio clip, and we're going to come back and break down and give our final thoughts and feelings about The City on the Edge of Forever.
What is it?
McCoy. He's a...
No, Jim.
Deliberate. could have saved her. Do you know what you just did?
He knows, Doctor. He knows.
All right, Clay, it's a classic. Let's see if you're... If your understanding of what makes a good episode has impacted the score on this one, or are you just going to agree that this is a 5? I think this is clearly a 5 for me. This is one of the better TOS episodes that I've seen. I don't know if it would be my favorite TOS episode. It's not my favorite episode of Star Trek, but it's a good episode in and of itself. What did you think?
Yeah, everything you just said I would agree with. I would give it a 5. Great episode, probably not my favorite episode, but it's undeniably very good. The one thing I did, we talked about it earlier a little bit, is I was surprised how borderline bad the first act of this episode is.
Yeah.
I don't know why they couldn't find a better reason to get down to that planet. I mean, I know, when you read the comic, or you probably read up to that point.
Yes. Yeah.
It's there's a different catalyst for it.
Yes.
But
it's too
even
dark.
It is. It's definitely too dark. But even so, I don't know. It's weird. It's very, why does McCoy jump in the teleporter to zap himself
down?
Yeah, to go down there. Yeah, McCoy's whole, crazy man thing is just, it's not very good. It's not a very good catalyst for the action that's happening.
No, I mean, would you... I think the way around it that I was thinking, right, is you have them on the planet already, right? Mm-hmm. They're exploring this thing. One of the crewmen gets injured, and McCoy has to use that drug on him. Mm-hmm. But McCoy slips and stabs himself, and then in, a delirium, he just kind of stumbles into the portal by accident.
Yeah, sure, that works.
It cuts down on them needing to be on the ship for 5 minutes and then beaming himself down, which doesn't make any sense. So it just
sounds
like that.
It also would add... You having a little bit more time on the planet could add. I mean, obviously, you got budget restraints and stuff. But
right.
Ideally, having some more time on the planet would add a little bit more mystery to that place. Like if they're exploring the planet and they stumble upon this thing, or so they're exploring the planet and then, like you said, a crew member gets injured because of some whatever. I think that would have worked perfectly.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't do that.
Yeah, it does just take a very long time to get moving in the beginning.
Yeah.
I like this episode. I think it's a nice sort of change of pace from what the show actually is, and I think it's good. But anyway, guys, if you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube, like in the comments, appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review helps get the show out there. All iTunes reviews are always appreciated by me. You can go to facebook.com/thepenskypodcast. You can go to patreon.com/thepenskypodcast where we're talking about a bunch of stuff. You get extra content if you give a couple dollars a month.
Yeah.
You get talked about RoboCop, and we're talking about – I don't know if you have any interest in doing the next ones. We have to do Ex Machina, and we have to do Suicide Squad. Those are the two that are up for this month.
Yeah, I love Ex Machina. I'd be happy to talk about that one. Suicide Squad – sure.
I think I watered down the voting a little bit too much for this one. I shouldn't do 5 options. It kind of spreads the field too thin.
Yeah.
So we'll change that up. But yeah, unfortunately Metallica is some kind of monster lost. I really wanted
Boo.
To talk about that one.
Well, I mean, it's not really on message really, but who cares?
Well, if Kirk Hammett had gone back in time and saved James Hetfield from being hit by a bus, and everything could have been all right.
And if you happen to be in a comic book store, I just last week, actually, 2 weeks ago, had a comic come out called Redline, which is very fun that you should pick up. And it's very violent and very obscene, not for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Sci-fi story, takes place on Mars, a lot of fun. And I just had an issue of Star Trek Deviations come out, which has a alternate cover by me. So keep your eyes open for that.
Yep, you guys can check that out. And also, me and Clay are going to be doing... a shorter discussion. We were trying to do it for this one, but I didn't realize that the comic was so long.
I was surprised.
We're going to be breaking down the comic of the original version, the original treatment of City on the Edge, which is what we've kind of been hinting at this episode. We will do that. It'll be extra content. If you guys go to comixology.com, you can buy that comic on there. You can also buy Clay's Redline thing, and you can do all that stuff if people are not near comic stores, because I don't know what people's situations are. But that's
it's the future.
It's the future, living in the digital tomorrow.
Where comics are somehow easier and harder to buy. Much like the gate in City on the Edge of Forever, it is both is and isn't.
It both is and is possible, is and is not possible to get these things that I want. Clay, thank you very much for coming on and talking about City on the Edge.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me back.
Guys, we're done with TOS season one. We're going to be moving on to season two. I hope.
Was this the season finale of season one?
No, there's one more after this, which is not a good episode.
Yeah.
This is also of an era where they don't care about season beginnings and season ends. Yeah. But yeah, we're moving on to season two. We're going to be talking about A Mock Time. As always, you guys can go to thepenskypodcast.com to see my written reviews for the episodes that we aren't podcasting about. We're just doing that for TOS because I think it was the audience's opinion that we don't want to get stuck in TOS for too long.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Do you agree with skipping the episodes that we've been doing so far?
I think so. Yeah. I think you're going to have that people say that again once you hit like Voyager. So.
Yeah.
In 2025, people, when you get to Voyager.
People really want Deep Space Nine. And
yeah, that's understandable.
I'm interested to get to Deep Space Nine as well. But I think that this will be a nice sort of, I keep saying it, but a good palate cleanse for us before we get back into a full-on series of something. But yeah.
And you're doing the movies after this, right?
Movies after this, so that'll even take a little bit more time.
Are you doing the cartoon?
I might do the cartoon as Patreon episodes if people are interested. Okay. There's only 22 episodes of the animated series, which
only.
Well, they're also 22 minutes each.
Oh, okay,
so that makes it a little bit easier to. But
a little bit.
My, we'll see. I don't think people want to talk about the animated series. I don't think people care about the animated series. Mm-hmm. But that is it. That is what it is. We're moving on to TOS season two, guys. A Mock Time is up next, and I forget what's on after that.
Is that the Spock and Kirk fight?
Yep, the Ponfar.
Ooh, yeah.
Yep, Spock needs to. Most popularly known from Cable Guy.
The Cable Guy.
Clay, thanks again for coming on.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Guys, we will see you next time.